This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jens Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Greg Peterson is going to join the program a little bit later on in this very hour, get his best bets in Major League Baseball. Levi Weaver is going to join the program now that the dust has settled in hour number three, coming up here, talking all things MLB trade deadline and beyond. But before we get there, Jensen, we do have breaking news in to begin this hour, and that's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
And it comes to us from the NFL, and I guess the sit-ins work. We'll see what's going to happen in Detroit with Jahmyr Gibbs, but how about this? One half of that sit-in was Bijan Robinson down in the ATL. Remember that last week, people? He was going there, but he wasn't practicing, right? Well, the Falcons have reached agreement, this per Adam Schefter. 3-year extension worth up to $75 million. That's going to make him the highest paid running back in NFL history. It's a record $51 million guaranteed, $37 million right there, Jensen, with one stroke of the pen. I don't think we're surprised. We talked about this a little bit last week with the sit-ins. And again, this is going to have some domino effects now with Jahmyr Gibbs in Detroit and beyond. What do you make of the ATL locking up Bijan?
This is pretty significant, right? Devon Achane, as far as total value of a contract, was at $64 million. So not only does it make him the highest paid, it is by a wide margin, $11 million higher now in total value at $75 million. This is big, right? Because he's age 24 season at signing. Achane was 4 years, $64 million. You're looking at Breece Hall at age 24 was 3 years for $43.5 million. Jonathan Taylor, 3 years at $42 million. And now we shall see what happens in Motown with Jahmyr Gibbs. But this is a big one. You got the guy. And now that's one big distraction that Kevin Stefanski and the entire organization don't have to worry about anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, we talked about those things. That's kind of the new way you do it now. You show up at the facility. You don't practice until you get that deal because you don't want to get hurt. And we talk about injuries all the time here. I love this as a Falcons backer this year. I hope the quarterback room gets healthy here, but that is a key linchpin to this offense and maybe the most dynamic running back you have in the game today. You can make that argument, that's for sure. Major League trade deadline has come and gone, and we talked a lot about it in hour number one. Please like, subscribe to the VSiN by the Books podcast. It is fascinating because I think people are making different declarations now that it's over. Sure, the Dodgers are clearly the team to beat as they go for three-peat this year as they get Tarek Skubal. But other teams like the Cubs, like the Rays, certainly the Guardians, I think their fans can wake up and say, at least we made moves. And the Red Sox, they're all making some inroads here, Jensen, to be heard from in this iteration of the postseason in October.
Big deadline and a really great job by a lot of different teams being involved. And I think that was the thing I took away most is that when you've got the amount of teams that are alive within, you know, 3-4 games of a playoff spot, I mean, you're talking about the Twins went out and bought, the Mariners did, the Orioles did a little buying and selling. The Tigers, obviously, we know sold the biggest piece with Tarek Skubal. The Blue Jays already did their offseason shopping and still have a shot. I mean, the Jose Siriano acquisition for Toronto is very big news because of what they'll able to be have at least at the beginning of next year with Dylan Cease, with Trey Savage, with Jose Siriano. They got Jameson Taillon. I mean, that was a really bang-up job, I think, by the front office there in Toronto to be able to kind of thread the needle a little bit. And they're still alive. That rotation is still going to keep you in the fight here, Dave, for the final 2 months of the year. And then on the flip side, San Diego, one of the bigger winners there on the National League side, getting both Casey Mize and Robbie Ray. The Pittsburgh Pirates, really great job. I told you I was excited about Luke Weaver, where he was going to go. Even more bullish now that the Pirates add their stopper to go with Gregory Soto at the back end. So a lot to like about teams that are right in there, and a lot of teams went for it yesterday. Great, great to see for the game.
Yep, and great minds think alike. We'll just leave it at that here. A little foreshadowing in what you just said there. I asked after the dust has settled, maybe a ticket that I added yesterday before that dust officially settled. The Phillies had to make some moves. Bryce Harper was very vocal about this with Dave Dombrowski. He said, hey, they asked Bryce, hey, what do you need? He said, We need help. We need help offensively. We need help with pitching. They got a little bit of both. Certainly, Luis Arraez is a big acquisition here, and that really does shift their infield dramatically, so much so that Bryce Harper's not in the infield. He's going to have to go back and get his outfield glove, Jensen, and go back out there and play some right field. Those moves to get Arraez and to switch up the defensive alignment, you think is okay, that they're going to be just fine moving these pieces around from second, third, and first?
Yeah, I think they'll be good. Stott, athletic, he can slide to third. I think Bohm, it's better for him. It kind of shields him there at first. And the way that Arraez had been playing in San Francisco, it sounded like he wanted that to be his primary destination as far as position he would play if dealt. So good news there. Trey Turner still got to clean up a few things there at shortstop. But ultimately, the Phillies get a pretty big piece that they needed. Could they have done a little bit more in the rotation? Maybe, but I think what you really like is, speaking of Mets, your old boy Brooks Raley, that's a major add to the back end of that bullpen. Really a guy that has neutralized a lot of big left-handed bats in the National League. And if you're foreshadowing out, a lot of teams in the National League making moves, especially on the pitching side, to neutralize that Los Angeles Dodgers order. It was kind of funny looking at what, hey, Jojo Romero, left-handed, goes to Milwaukee, trying to neutralize left-handed Dodger bats. Brooks Raley from Philadelphia, you got to play along here. You know, same thing with Brent Suter going to the Atlanta Braves. All those contenders trying to find left-handed specialists to be able to get the likes of Otani and Freeman and Muncy and all the left-handed bats they will face eventually in October.
Yeah, and ironically, the Dodgers go out and get Chris Bubich, kind of a sneaky little deal there. Left-hander, big-time power arm there from Kansas City. Was an all-star a year ago, and maybe he can neutralize some of those Philly bats if they see them, like a Bryce Harper or a Kyle Schwarber somewhere down the road. It's amazing kind of the tactical moves that some of these teams with high expectations. By the way, the Phillies are 10-1 to win the pennant. Forget about World Series. 10-1 to win the pennant. They are the fifth betting choice behind the Dodgers, of course, the Brewers, the Braves, and now the Cubs, fortifying their starting rotation in a big, big way yesterday. We talk about it a lot here in the program. We're going to talk about it, sadly, just about every day, because you see about somebody else at camp going down. Kobe Bryant, this is significant for the Bears and their back end. He's going to be out at least 8 to 10 weeks. So that's significant time into the regular season here for the Bears side. And Mike Evans, you're hoping, if you're San Francisco, on the news of Ricky Pearsall, who's already done for the year, you hope this is minor, but it's still a quad strain that their newly acquisition, their big acquisition in the offseason, Mike Evans coming over from Tampa, he's a little bit dinged up. And that wide receiver core right now, Jensen, for the Niners, it does not look good on paper.
No, it doesn't. And they're just going to try and find healthy bodies here, what it feels like, in week one of the preseason. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that. Again, it bears repeating, Kobe Bryant, marquee free agent signing for the Chicago Bears secondary, trying to replace multiple starters back there. That is a huge blow. So if you kind of run the timeline out, Dave, that's the first third of the regular season, even on the short end of the rehab timeline. So devastating blow for the Bears secondary.
We've got football in just over 48 hours or so here from Tuesday to get to Thursday, and that'll be in Canton, Ohio with the Hall of Fame game. It's going to be the Panthers, a 1.5 favorites right now. 36.5 is that total against the Cardinals, and we know the quarterback's going to be at least for 1.5. Kenny Pickett is going to be the starter for Carolina. So that's announced. That's official. Maybe you're going to look to first halves out there if you're going to try to find edges here. You know, I mentioned it earlier in the program. This was the 20th overall pick by the Steelers back in the day. First-round pick. He was the only first-round quarterback selected in that draft when he came out of Pittsburgh. And now he's been well-traveled. And here he is landing in Carolina, Jensen. And sometimes you start to look at it and go, how many more opportunities will I get? Kenny Pickett gets his, at least to kick off the preseason on Thursday night.
He will be fighting uphill with a couple of the ATS trends here as the Carolina Panthers starter. John Ewing, great friend of the program over at BetMGM, got a great post. In the Dave Canales era, the Panthers against the spread in the NFL preseason, Dave, 0-6. 0-6. Panthers are a 1.5 favorite against the Cardinals in the Hall of Fame game. Why is that significant? Because also our great man, Steve Mackinnon at VSiN.com, has a fabulous trend. Since 2013, Hall of Fame game underdogs are 7-4 straight up and 8-2-1 against the spread, including 5 consecutive outrights. Put those two together, Dave, the Vanderbilt math tells me Cardinals, forget the points, play them outright the way it's gone that could be an interesting one come Thursday night.
Oh, by the way, Michael Fuller will be making his coaching debut, as we know, as a head coach here for the Cardinals on Thursday night as well. So, you know, he's going to be excited to try to go out there and potentially get a W there in his first game. I know they don't keep those stats for real, unless you were John Harbaugh in Baltimore, where it felt like they just never lost preseason games. Mauricio Pochettino is going to be still the skipper and the manager here for Team USA when we come back and play some World Cup soccer in 2030. So he has been signed. Jensen, I think this is going to be a signing or a re-signing for a lot of the faithful out there. They're going to like this. I think if you've been kind of captivated by USA soccer, feels like the right guy to get four more years.
It is. And for a guy that really brought so much excitement to just the common fan during the World Cup. I mean, many were not a soccer aficionado, but boy, the way he had the group playing, the energy, and unfortunately the exit the way it was, it still gave you a bullish outlook on what this program could have. Let us hope that you and I are handicapping a team that could find their way deeper into the knockout round when we go across the pond to Spain and Portugal. 2030, Dave, it'll be here like football season, very quickly and right on our doorstep before you know it.
I don't know that anything will be able to top the Miracle on Ice in 1980 when a bunch of ragtag college kids beat the Soviets. But is that what we're talking about if USA Soccer ever won a World Cup here in our lifetime, Jensen? Will we be put it up there in those type of in those rankings, if you will?
I don't know. Boy, it could be. Could be. Let's talk about it when we get to like a semifinal.
Yeah, let's run a walk before we run. Greg Peterson's coming up next. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. Always look forward to our conversations talking Major League Baseball with the man who runs all over Las Vegas, the one and only Greg Peterson, host of VSiN Coast to Coast Hoops podcast and the Baseball Betting Show. Give him a follow on X at GUnit_81 and joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Greg, you have not gone for the run, obviously, yet, because it's still super early in Las Vegas this morning. You've been getting a lot of great challenges out there. Has it affected your running? Because tell the people the running streak that you're on. Like you and JVT might be two of the more transformative personalities we have here at the network when it comes to taking care of your body. What are you doing every day for the people out there?
12 miles plus a day, every day for 3,000 plus straight days. And it's actually been really helping out the runs. Like every single day, I feel like I'm getting faster and faster. I was dealing with some leg pain, and that is like all gone at this point. I am in amazing shape right now, so it has been really helping me out. And I mean, if you're looking for me to do something random at GUnit_81 on Twitter, TikTok, all those social media platforms, you name something that I need to run, and I'll do it, whether that be at midnight like I did on the Las Vegas trip a few days ago, or if it's just me trying to run every mile a little bit faster.
You would probably be in line for running stairs at Wrigley Field, I think would be an interesting one. And being part of the beer snake at some point in the bleachers out there, that would be a sight to see. What will be a sight to see, though, Greg, is we get the debut of Tarek Skubal in a Dodger uniform at the friendly confines, 8:05 Eastern, first pitch tonight. Not a play for you, but I'm sure we all will be fans kind of wanting to see the prize possession now in his new home. What will you kind of be watching? What will you be keen on for this matchup just as a fan tonight?
Well, I do love myself a good beer snake, and I love myself a good Dodgers run line here because Robbie Arozarena, I think he's doing for a lot of regression. 3.75 ERA is not bad. 4.82 fielding pen with 6.2 strikeouts per 9 innings. That's a big reason why I'm in on the over in this spot. not a lot of people are wanting to take it over in the first start of Tariq Skubal, but I mean, the wind is going to be blowing out there at Wrigley. Not like overly extreme or anything like that, but as the game goes on, it should be getting more and more, shall we say, blustery out there. Maybe not the warmest temperatures, but heavy Dodgers team is averaging 5.7 runs per game away from home. That is number one in all of baseball. For Skubal, strikeout to walk ratio of 8.3. He's been absolutely incredible this year. But do be mindful that this is a Cubs team that they themselves have been a top five team in terms of run creation as well. So like that total over. And for the Dodgers, it's like minus 120, minus 125. But I'm willing to lay a run half on that run line.
Wow. Very, very aggressive right there with Tarik Skubal making his debut for L.A. today. But I'm picking up what you're putting down. Metropolitans, I don't know if they have any relievers left here because I think they dealt them all yesterday here or over the weekend, Greg. Now they're going to go to Cleveland. They feel pretty good about their standing here and got some offensive help. Low total tonight in Cleveland with Sean Manaea on the bump here for the Metropolitans. 7.5. Would you be willing to take a stab at that over?
Yep, I am. And you mentioned exactly why. Oscar Brisbane, Brooks Raley, Luke Weaver. Everyone got traded away. I think that they traded away Mr. and Mrs. Met at the trade deadline as well.
No.
Like, my goodness, that entire bullpen is just completely gone at this point. And for Sean Manaea, he hasn't been bad. He has been amazing, hovering right around about a 4.25, 4.35 ERA, 1.3 home runs, 2.9 walks per nine innings. And on the other side for the Cleveland Guardians, Joey Cantillo has been giving up 4-plus walks per nine innings. Keeps the ball in the yard. He gives up one home run per nine innings. And man, this is a Mets offense that doesn't have a lot of power right now. Juan Soto is currently out of the fold, and that is much of the New York Mets offense at this point. You mentioned with the Guardians, they are currently dead last in the big leagues, averaging 3.9 runs per game, but they pick up a few guys. I know that they picked up Nathaniel Lowe from the Reds, so that's going to help them out a little bit. And I mean, even if you look beyond the trade deadline acquisitions, they got back Jose Ramirez, Ano Martinez, about a week or two ago as well. That by osmosis is going to be able to help out this Guardians lineup as well. So in on the over and in on the Guardians on the money line.
Yeah, I see Joe Adell in there tonight as well against the lefties. Been pulverizing lefties. So hopefully an offensive infusion there in Northeast Ohio, right down the street from me. Offensive infusion is usually what we talk about when we are looking at Cincinnati Reds games, albeit this has been one of the anomalies all year, Greg. Just an offense that has never really gotten on track. The elixir, though, could be the Athletics pitching staff. Is this a side to back here with the Red Legs later on at Great American Ballpark tonight?
Yeah, the Reds have been a bottom six team in terms of run creation at home. They've actually hit for more power and more runs per game away from home rather than at home. And they call it Great American Small Park. So that's been interesting to say the least. But for JT Ginn, you're getting some positive juice here with the Athletics. I'm not going to take the positive juice with JT Ginn, though, because he has not started in over 2 weeks. He's giving up 4 walks per 9 innings. And this Athletics bullpen, they traded away a few pieces at the deadline. Even before they traded them away from since June 1st, they've got a bullpen ERA above a 6.25. My goodness, it has been absolutely terrible. And then for the Cincinnati Reds, they do trade away a few guys like a Nathaniel Lowe, but it's not like this was a full-fledged sell or anything like that. You've got Sel Stewart, you've got Ellie De La Cruz, you've got so many of those good bats out there. And for Brady Singer, he's been very good recently. The overall numbers this year are not great. He's giving up 1.8 home runs per nine innings in that neighborhood, about a 4.25 to a 4.35 ERA, but 3 earned runs or fewer allowed in 8 out of his last 9 starts. The Athletics, at one time, this team was 38-8. I think that they've won 7 out of their last 24 or 7 out of their last 25 games. It is just toil pulled on the team. I want no part of them. Give me the Reds here on the money line and that 9 to the over.
Yeah, Brady Singer was the guy I think a lot of people thought would get dealt yesterday. He did not. Now he's on the bump tonight here for the Reds against the Athletics. I was a little disappointed as a Marlins backer here as to what they did or did not do at the deadline, trading away a couple pieces here, one offensively and one in the pitching staff. Now they start a key series against the Braves, and the Braves have to be, I would hope, excited about their prospects here post-trade deadline. What do you think? Who gets off on the good foot tonight down there in the ATL?
Yeah, for the Marlins, not a lot of activity for them. If you love slash hated them before the trade deadline, you're probably feeling relatively the same right now about them. And for Ryan Gusto, no may Gusto, I'm backing him. 5.23 ERA this season. Now, the fielding independent actually points towards a little bit of positivity, but he's always had a little bit of a walks issue. He's not getting a ton of strikeouts in. Granholm's probably doing for a bit of regression here for the Atlanta Braves. He's posting up about a 3.88 ERA, closer to a 5.10 fielding independent, but this is a Marlins team that really doesn't generate a lot of power. Bottom 17 in terms of home runs on a prior bad basis. Specialty for them has been stolen bases. They've been a top three team in terms of stolen bases, so that'll help you out a little bit, but willing to trust in the Atlanta Braves here. They got back Ronald Acuna Jr. a few days ago. That's certainly going to be a help out the offense. And for the Braves, still number one in the National League in terms of bullpen ERA. They kept all those good guys, Dylan Lee, Dylan Dodd, Raisio Iglesias. The list goes on and on. So in on the Braves on the money line, 9+ is what I'm seeing the total at. I also took a shot on the under with that good bullpen.
All right, we get a little Scrabble matchup tonight deep in the heart of Texas when we got the Blue Jays and the Astros. Trey Savage, Hayden Wisniewski. Not sure how many points either of those last names will get you. It would be a lot, especially with the triple word square if you cover that. Can we cover Trey Savage here with the Blue Jays and maybe a little short road dog being able to upset the apple cart? Blue Jays won yesterday against the Astros. Do they do it back-to-back days?
The only way to get more points is if you had an X on the board, and I think a X is going to mark the spot for the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm in on the money line of them because for Trey Savage, he's been better away from home rather than at home. The ERA is darn near a full point lower away from home rather than at home. Do recognize he's got a walk his issue. He's been giving up 4+ walks per 9 innings, but Hayden Wisniewski, he's only made 7 starts in 2 seasons for the Houston Astros, just his second start this season, and with Houston, over a 450 fielding independent, over a 450 ERA, gives up quite a bit of the deep ball for the Astros. That outfield just has not been great, to say the least. A mix and match guys have not given you too much at the bottom lineup. Now the Blue Jays, they say, hold my beverage, because this team has been a bottom two team in terms of run creation. Outside of Kazuma Okamoto, nobody has more than 12 home runs on the roster, but Tyler Rogers, Louis Varland, these are guys that have been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. That bullpen has been relatively solid here for the Blue Jays. Think they get a lower scoring game that they pull out. So took plus money here on the Blue Jays and that 8.5 total to the under.
Now, very quickly, sneak in one more. The Rays went out there to Colorado, put up a big number last night. Do you think they keep those good vibes going again? They feel pretty good about their chances now to hold on to the AL East after the trade deadline.
I do, and man, did Freddie Peralta need a change of scenery. He's given up 33 runs and 30-plus innings in his last 7 starts. Like, it has been not great. I think that New York was just sucking the life out of him. Just any place was better than New York for this guy and for the Rockies. It's not been a great season for their pitching, to say the least. Gabriel Hughes has actually been relatively solid. Very small sample size, though. Think that he's doing for a little bit of regression. Give me that 11 to the over and the race here on the money line.
Couldn't agree more on Fastball Freddy. I think it'll get corrected down there in Tampa, and I did appreciate at least he said he took some blame there leaving New York. It did not work out well. Greg, you're the best. Enjoy that run today. Just make sure it's not too hot when you go out there in Las Vegas. Speaking of New York, when we come back, they're going to be in the spotlight here. We're going to break them down here in the Daily Gridiron. What is on the agenda, and what can this season look like for the JETS Jets? That's next right here. Beeson by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
The wait is over. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is here. You can sign up today for VSiN Pro, and when you do, get instant access to our College Football Betting Guide. It features previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, best bets from the sharpest minds here at the network. Plus, you're also going to get our NFL Betting Guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today, just $9.99, or you can get a full year and save 50% off of the VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Again, please like, subscribe to the VSiN by the Books pod. You can listen to those conversations we've already had with Matt Youmans. He did a lot of good write-ups there in the College Football Betting Guide, as did a lot of our experts here at the network. Jensen, we are excited for that. We're also excited, obviously, for the NFL. Can't wait. We've been breaking down every single team here. Before we get to Thursday, can you believe it, Jensen? We've been doing this all summer long, and now we've got the JETS Jets. So we put right there in the crosshairs this year. It is interesting because we have JVT on every Wednesday. I know he likes this football team, likes in the sense of possibly hitting a win total over, that he feels like they've improved a lot in the offseason. I don't know if I'm as bullish on this team as JVT and some others here at the network. Where are you at first blush here of the football Jets?
Yeah, interesting stop on our daily gridiron here as we count down to the Hall of Fame game. And I think for the Jets, obviously, year one of the Aaron Glenn regime, not the way they had envisioned whatsoever. Disaster on the field. The playoff drought continues. Not that it was ever in doubt last year. We have a little bit of an overhaul of the staff. Frank Reich, the OC, now Brian Duker, the DC. And you would imagine that Aaron Glenn will be heavily involved there in the defensive play calling. Especially after what they did just in the draft. David Bailey, number two overall, Texas Tech elite pass rusher that, you know, was going to be, it was not going to be a bad thing, no matter who they had a decision to draft on at number two. But I think that will be a huge addition for them. Obviously, the three first round picks, Kenyon Sadiq, the tight end from Oregon at number 16 overall, Mark Cooper Jr. At number 30. So three first round picks to go along with the additions in free agency. Joseph Asai, the edge rusher, 3 years for what, $36 million, I believe. Demario Davis, the linebacker, for 2 years and $22 million, reuniting with Aaron Glenn and obviously understanding the culture and leadership that Glenn aspires to have. They did a pretty good job also through the rest of the line of scrimmage. And then the major extensions. We just talked to people just joining us, Bijan Robinson, now the highest paid running back in NFL history. The Breece Hall extension just a year ago, what, 3 years, $44-45 million. And then Minkus Fitzpatrick as well, 3 years, $40 million. They do have some notable losses. Elijah Vera Tucker, the guard, ends up going to the Patriots. John Simpson also headed to the Ravens. But honestly, Dave, the roster outlook, let's be honest, starts with the quarterback and the trade for Geno Smith. What do we think about the trigger man? And does that give you any hope whatsoever headed into 2026?
Well, that's the elephant in the room, Jensen. And that's where I have a sticking point with this football team and their futures. And seeing that win total of 5.5, again, and you're watching, you've booked the schedule here on FanDuel Sports Network on YouTube TV, you know, you get off on the, you would hope on the good foot potentially against Tennessee. I don't like that first game matchup for them at all. And then you're going to have the Packers coming in. You're going to be big underdogs in Detroit and Chicago. And then the Browns, you would think maybe week five is the first time that you can legitimately say they're going to be a favorite to win a football game. Like that's a, if you don't get that first one in Tennessee, that you're going to be staring 0-4 square in the face. Now, there are markets out there. First coach should be fired. Aaron Glenn's going to be a name that's going to come up, I think, because it's New York. And then I'm looking at the quarterback room overall. And, you know, Geno Smith, again, find somebody who loves Geno Smith like Pete Carroll. If you can find that, you're going to be doing okay in your life. And it didn't work out 2.0 style with Pete in Las Vegas last year. And Pete's no longer a head coach in the NFL. And I'm not putting that right there at the feet of Geno Smith, but you know, there is a reason he was kind of given that one-shot deal, and that was what he chose. He chose Geno. Aaron Glenn is choosing Geno Smith. So it could be a case of history repeating itself all over again. And you mentioned that offensive line. This is not exactly a spring chicken that's behind center anymore. And then if something did happen to Geno or its performance, look at the rest of the roster in the quarterback room. Are you looking at Cade Klubnik? You're looking at Brady Cook? And Bailey Zappi's still on the roster for today. We don't know if he's going to be there when it gets to opening day. But then you're looking at two unproven guys and young guys in Klubnik and Brady Cook. So there's not a lot there when I look at that quarterback room that I would get excited about and say, yes, I want to play that over 5.5. Not for me, not my money. This would only be an underplay, if anything at all, if I'm looking at that win total. And Jensen, in a place like New York, it's going to be hard if you get off to a 1-3, 0-4 start potentially after the disaster of last year and how things fell apart there last year with Aaron Glenn in year one to hold it together if you get off to a really slow start again. And that schedule says to me, with three daunting games against the Packers, Lions, and Bears, oh my, back to back to back in 2, 3, and 4, you better beat the Titans. Because if you don't, Jensen, I don't know when your first win's coming. It's probably not coming to at least Cleveland.
Yeah, the interesting stuff here, and a great reason to not only become a VSiN Pro subscriber, but when you get our NFL betting guide, as well as our newly released college football betting guide, you get these series trends and these matchups week in and week out. You are correct, Dave. The first time a projected favorite for the Jets would be against the Browns there in week five at home, mm-hmm. for what it's worth. Jets in their last 11 head-to-head against Cleveland are 8-3 ATS. They are in week one, and I know you love the Titans. How about this trend? Let me get your thoughts. The Jets are 11-2 ATS. 11-2 ATS against Tennessee since 1998. So all of the iterations of Jets teams and quarterbacks, coaches, what have you, they have had the Titans number. Right now, that line, and I'll go find it here on DraftKings while I get your thoughts on it, but mm-hmm. that seems like an interesting million spot, doesn't it? Just, hey, no one knows what the hell's going to happen in week one. It is what it is. But I got to tell you, this is a fascinating little spot here. If you kind of want to lock and load early, just knowing there is changes there. It's +3 on DraftKings at -$1.20. Any interest in the Jets even before we get to week one in that spot?
None for me. I know what the history says, but this is not Robert Saleh. This is not Aaron Glenn. I know all the other iterations of it. I get the history of it, and you should know all those things too. But I can't get there with the Jets. I just can't on the road. I am in that individual matchup. I'm very excited for the Titans side in week one, and I'd probably be looking to lay it and buck that historical trend a little bit with what I think these two teams are going to be doing this year. And here's the thing for the Jets, though. I like Aaron Glenn. I loved him as a player. I love his attitude. I thought he did a good job in Detroit as their defensive coordinator, and he earned this job here. And, you know, that's the one thing, is their defense, and that's what your calling card has to be as a head coach. It can't be an overseer in 2026 football. What side of the ball do you control, and what side of the ball are you showing your expertise on? And it's got to be defense for Aaron Glenn. And if that defense doesn't perform, they're going to have some tough offenses, because I think the Titans are going to be better offensively this year with Cam Ward and with Brian Daboll calling plays there as the OC, a legit OC that they're going to have under Robert Saleh. I think they're going to really struggle early in the year. So I could see 0-4 staring them square in the face. Look, you want to say that maybe in the middle half, it could get a little bit easier for the Jets. You got the Dolphins. A lot of people think are projecting them to be the worst team in the AFC East. I don't see it that way with the Fish, but that's the projections. The Raiders, we know, are a work in progress. Maybe you can find some avenues there. But, Jensen, the schedule is not easy when you're one of the worst teams in the NFL. And let's make no bones about it. That's who the Jets are. And they can give us hope, and they can give us a higher win total of 5.5 for a 3-win football team. Are we going to project them to double up their win total this year? I'm not. So, again, I don't want to poo-poo on the Jets and New York faithful before this year even begins. But for me, outside of the Cardinals on the schedule at the back end of it, the two against the Fish, you better win at least one of those, and you better beat the Brownies. But, Jensen, outside of that, they're going to be dogs in the majority of these games. They're certainly not going to be favorites to win 6 games, I can tell you that.
Okay, so 9th toughest schedule of the 32, and a great little synopsis on their win total. The over 5.5 might seem psychotic to expect success for New York, but this is a minuscule hump to get over. That is the beginning sentence for our great staff writing up the AFC East. The 5th easiest schedule in the league in some respects, and kind of looking where they will be able to catch a couple of teams in some situational spots. But I tend to agree. Like, I got to wait and see what the quarterback looks like. You better get one of Tennessee or Cleveland, and you better be able to find a way to be competitive in both the Miami and the Raider game. Outside of that, my friend, they are dogs everywhere else, and significant ones, touchdown or more, in a lot of these matchups.
In Geno you trust in 2026? That was my money, Jensen. No shot there. Let's talk some Major League Baseball. Trade deadline is come and gone. The Daily Diamond, it's straight ahead.
Tuned in to VC. VSiN by the books, right here on VSiN.
The Circus Survivor documentary is heating up. This week's episode is called The Turning Point, and for very good reason. It's week five. For the first time in Circus Survivor history, the number one pick of the week goes down in flames on a Thursday night. Jensen Lewis, don't I know it. And the chaos that follows is unlike anything the contest has seen before. By the time weeks six through nine play out, the contenders separate from the pretenders, and the pressure gets very, very real. $18.7 million is on the line. Watch the next episode Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN. You've got to catch up. Episodes 1 and 2 are on YouTube right now. All you have to do is search VSiN Live. Back here in this edition of VSiN by the Books, Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. The dust has settled in the trade deadline. Has come and gone in Major League Baseball. Jensen, lots to talk about winners and losers in today's edition of the Daily Diamond. It is a fun exercise. I think it's more plausible to do something like this with wins and losers. I know we like to do this in the NFL draft per se. I think it's harder to see how some of those guys obviously going to pan out. Yes, there's going to be a lot of kids that got traded yesterday. I'm looking at the Metropolitans and all these new kids. And it almost feels like, Jensen, you get a bunch of these guys and you hope one out of, say, three pans out to be a big-time major leaguer somewhere down the road. Your deadline winners, are they because of proven commodities or for maybe the unknown that could come in years to come?
Yeah, I don't really do deadline losers because, you know, again, when you're looking at trades, Dave, it can be unfair to judge immediately whether, you know, it's a winning or losing trade. And sometimes you have to wait for 3 or 4 years with the prospects involved to see if indeed it was a win-win for both sides or maybe one side benefited from the other. A handful of these teams, and I had kind of a tie for one of them, but my five teams that in my eyes, and this is just for what they're getting for this year and this season, were the five teams that I went with. Let me start with the LA Dodgers. This is obvious. We're not going to reinvent the wheel here. You get the best player on the board, the best trade chip, and they become even better than what they were already entering this season. Just a matter of time before they get not only Blake Snell, but Tyler Glasnow back, but getting Tarek Skubal, who will make his Dodger debut today against Chicago, to really allow you a little more stress-free run through this rotation every fifth day. That is going to certainly allow you a little bit more wiggle room to allow some of your other rotation aces to be able to get right. I think they did some good things around the edges too. Ben Roethlisberger, they were looking for a backup catcher just to have to allow Will Smith to be able to get right and be healthy. He'll be back in September at some point. And then the back end additions on the bullpen side. Remember, the Edwin Diaz came back off the IL. I don't know if people realize that. So that was kind of a little acquisition, if you will, internally for a guy that they spent a boatload of money on to be their stopper at the end of games here. They do get Chris Bubich back, who is working his way back from the elbow issue. But all in all, you get the best trade chip. So the Dodgers, one of the winners for me. A couple ones, and I'll go quickly through them because I want to get your thoughts and how I think this affects the odds. The Red Sox did give up a haul for Adley Rutschman, but for this year and what they need and with the unknown of next year, I think it was perfect. You get a switch hitting catcher, you get a former number one overall draft pick, and the change of scenery is going to work. Mark my words, it's going to work. He's going to come back from the wrist inflammation. He's going to be a key cog in that lineup, and he has been excellent handling pitching staff. So that is even better news on the defensive side. You know, I've been singing the Chicago Cubs praises for a while. I think they were an absolute slam dunk winner of the trade deadline yesterday. They also, throughout the weekend and into yesterday afternoon, what did I identify with you? If you got top end starting pitching, you were right in the fight. Well, they did exactly that. You get a guy who pitched in the World Series in Kevin Gausman last year. You're going to get a guy in Clay Holmes, who before the injury day was absolutely phenomenal pitching there for the New York Mets. Tyrone Taylor's a nice auxiliary piece for them to use in certain spots. Ryan Zephyrjohn is going to also be a standout reliever. People probably don't know a lot about him because he pitched with the Angels. And so if you're not seeing up late on the East Coast, watching out West, this is a guy that's got a funky delivery. He is going to be a nice little change of pace, but it lengthens the back end of the bullpen that they sorely needed to address. The Tampa Bay Rays highlighted it earlier. I'll say it again. Man, you get Liam Hicks. That's a huge addition, a middle-of-the-order presence that is going to be so critical for them. And I think getting Freddie Peralta into the tutelage of where Tampa Bay's developmental and scouting department, they've probably identified things mechanically they feel they can adjust with him in short order to get him back to a front-of-the-rotation arm. But make no mistake, that rotation is as good as any when healthy, and they are going to be a force to be reckoned with, no question about it. I had a tie, and I had to pick five, but I think the Philadelphia Phillies and the San Diego Padres deserve praise. The Padres getting the two big starters, obviously, in Casey Mize and obviously Robbie Ray. That is a huge, huge bolstering to rotation that you're not asking these guys, Dave, to go six, seven innings each night. If you get through five, hand it off to the best bullpen in baseball, or at least the best 1-2 duo. If you get through six or seven innings, you know, Maury Hone and Miller staying intact is a huge boost for AJ Preller. So absolutely love that. And then I think Philly and Dave Dombrowski did what they needed to do. You needed a contact-oriented guy. You got Luis Arraez. I'm not as concerned with adjusting the infield position, sending Bryce Harper back out. I think Harper is going to need a little onboarding, so they may be gentle with how much he is out there day in and day out, but they get the bat that they needed. They also address the back end of the bullpen by getting Brooks Raley, by also getting Caleb Killian too, who, again, if you don't watch a lot of West Coast baseball late at night on the East Coast, that's a nice power arm that helps lengthen the bullpen. So those, you know, five on paper, I would give, you know, a tie with San Diego to be in there, but those my deadline winners from yesterday.
You know, this time last year, once the trade deadline came and went, and, you know, Toronto was leading the AL East at that point. The Yankees, everybody felt like it was a matter of time. And I did nibble on Toronto to win that division at plus money, and I got that home because they had about a three-game lead right at around the All-Star break. When I look at the divisions in the American League now that the dust has settled here after the trade deadline, Jensen, what strikes me is the pricing for the favorites is very affordable. Tampa Bay is minus $1.20. The White Sox are minus $1.25. And the Astros might be the leakiest of the three. They're plus $1.10. Like, normally this juncture, you're kind of decided, at least you've got a $3 favorite, a $2.50 favorite, something like that, which you're going to see in the National League, obviously, with the divisions being much wider in the National League than they are in the American League. But I look at those three teams. Houston, again, I mentioned that off the top of the program. They do get Dalton Varsho. They needed a left-handed outfielder, left-handed bat with an outfielder, and he plays great defense. I'm not sure about the offense there with Varsho. I don't know that they did enough, but Texas was so underwhelming at the deadline with what they did. Seattle made a move to get Taylor Ward. I know we keep waiting on Seattle. Is there a price point? Because maybe the one that jumps out to me is Tampa Bay at minus $1.20 with the additions they made. That feels like a pretty good bet at this juncture, unless the Red Sox, and I like what they did too, and I'm glad you had them included as your number one, that at least Craig Breslow took a shot with Adley Rutschman and said, we're going to make some moves here and go for this thing. I don't know if they can run down Tampa, but I think I'm less concerned about the Yankees today than I was 2 days ago.
I like the Rays price. I think they're going to be in that position to really be able to put a stranglehold on this top spot. And I think they also can move even closer to getting a top two, regardless of where they are here the next couple of weeks. I think you are really putting pressure on the Yankees here without Judge. The more you can create space, the better off. I actually really do like what the Chicago White Sox did. And I know Cleveland made moves. They had to make moves. I don't know if I buy in as they're going to be as impactful, at least with where Joe Adell, who is terrible against right-handers, but he's great against lefties. Let's see what Nathaniel Lowe did in an underwhelming Cincinnati Red lineup. But man, if you're Chris Getz, take a bow. You did a great job with Castillo. You get Brazoban in the back end of the bullpen. You also get Joey Bart, who's going to be a great catcher for you. Brenton Doyle, one of the great defensive outfielders in covering maybe the toughest center field in baseball in Colorado. The White Sox are appropriate favorites at odds on. And I mean, I wouldn't even mind a little sprinkle on a Rays to win the East and a White Sox to win the Central at plus 230 parlay. That looks pretty enticing right now.
I like that. And I like how you avoided the AL West, because I would too. I can't figure that division out at all right now with the Astros and what they're doing. They are the plus money choice now, plus $1.10. Seattle is the second betting choice in Texas, starting to drift a little bit in the marketplace here, about plus $3, $3.50 out there in some books as well. So the dust has settled there, Jensen. Great breakdown as always here. Your winners, again, the five winners for Jensen were Boston, Chicago, Cubs, the Dodgers, Phillies, and the Rays. Honorable mention went to San Diego. Maybe a little honorable mention as well to the White Sox, Jensen.
Yeah, yeah, I think those are in great spots. And here we go. Get ready to get the sprint started today, man. Going to be a lot of fun to watch.
We got the Daily Docket coming up next. We're going to break down the Big Ten because the College Football Betting Guide is out, and what a league they've got in store for you this year. That's all next right here on VSiN by the Books.